Welcome to the Gorepress Gorecast. Jamie and Sarah have opinions that may be considered disagreeable. Hell, they rarely agree themselves. So, sit back, strap in, and prepare for yet another horror movie podcast. Brought to you by www.gorepress.com.
So hello, and welcome to the third episode of the Gorepress Gorecast. I'm Dangerous Jamie, and I am here with Sarah, as always.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Sarah? You alright?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, I'm alright. I've had a bit of a hectic couple of weeks. It's spring break, so I've shirked off the normal sort of spring break responsibilities and just watched a fuckload more stuff than I normally would.
Sounds good.
It is. Do you want to kick off with what you've been watching?
I'll let you go first this time.
Alright, no problem. Well, like I said, because I've been on my 3-week break, I've still got a week left after this week, so I've watched a shit ton more stuff than what I'd normally watch. So I kicked it off with series 1 and series 2 of Life on Mars, which I love. It was meant to be in preparation for the new series of Ashes to Ashes, but I haven't got around to watching Ashes to Ashes yet, so fuck it. I love Life on Mars. I've also started watching Twin Peaks again from the start. I picked up the gold box, so I'm loving Twin Peaks at the moment. Did you ever watch Twin Peaks?
I did, a long time ago though. I think
same here.
It needs revisiting.
It definitely does. I don't even remember like who the killer was in the end, so so I'm really excited to find all that out again. Film-wise, I watched the amazing. Well, I say amazing. I watched the Fred Olen Ray Invisibility matriarchal classic Invisible Mom, which I've managed to score a 3 out of 10. It was fucking dire. I rewatched Red Riding in the Year of Our Lord 1980 because the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema were covering those three this week. I watched The Collector, which I've sent a review over to you about, which I loved. Mm-hmm. I thought it was amazing, kind of like Home Alone horror, really good fun. I watched the Charles Band movie Skullheads, which was a lot less, not anywhere near as good as I expected it to be. Absolutely dire. I watched the Andy Sidaris Tits and Guns classic Hard Hunted, which was the cheapest Andy Sidaris film I could find to buy, and probably the cheapest Andy Sidaris film that he made. I watched the Teenage Apocalypse trilogy. That's totally fucked up. The Doom Generation and Nowhere. I love Nowhere. It's one of my all-time favourite films. Doom Generation's probably as good, but it never affected me in the same way. And Totally Fucked Up was pretty good. I think there was a few too many characters, a few too much going on for Araki to keep track of all that stuff. I watched Die Hard 4, which I'd never seen, which was alright. Good fun, silly action stuff. I finally got around to watching The Orphanage, which was something that I haven't seen before, and I don't know why I'd never watched it, but I fucking loved it.
Really? I still haven't seen that. It's been sat in my to-watch pile for a really long time now.
It scared me, and it made me cry.
Okay, cool.
I really loved it. And then I watched the Tracy Lords Aliens and Boobs movie Not of This Earth, which was pretty good, I guess. I watched The Slammin' Salmon, which is the new movie from the Brokered Lizard people. I really love Super Troopers, and I kind of like Club Dread. Beer Fest was alright, but The Slammin' Salmon was really funny. I really liked it. Besides that, I watched Leprechaun 4, Leprechaun in Space, which he uses a lightsaber, for fuck's sake. I mean, it's directed by Brian Trenchard-Smith, so you can't do an awful lot wrong with it. It's pretty good fun. Obviously silly, loads of shit acting all over the place. Saturday, I had band practice, so as a sort of pre- and post-band practice amble, we watched Psychocop Returns, which obviously I love more than any other film ever. And we also watched The Invisible Maniac, which is also directed by Adam Rifkin, and is just as goofy and stupid and ridiculous and amazing. And the last thing I watched was Lake Mungo, which is an Australian sort of faux documentary. It's been getting quite a lot of love from the blogosphere and the podcast peeps. And I have to say, I didn't really like it very much. I think I was expecting quite a lot of sort of ghostly going-ons from it, and it was all very subdued and very sort of character-based, which is good, but I was expecting that ghost coming at the camera scene, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's everything I've been watching.
Okay.
Oh, I watched quite a bit of MasterChef as well. Because it was the final, and I was getting quite excited. But then I forgot to watch the actual fucking final last night. So, I believe that Dhruv won, which is a bit upsetting, because I want Alex to win. But, never mind.
Gutted.
Yeah.
Well, my list is nowhere near as long as yours. It's quite modest, actually, because I've been super busy the last fortnight. Finally got around to watching The Hamiltons, the Butcher Brothers directed film. That's another one that's been sat in my to-watch pile for a really long time, and I thought it was about time I gave it a go. Didn't blow me away.
I really love The Hamiltons.
I know you do, yeah. I know quite a few people who love it, and I've heard from a few people that they absolutely hated it. I think it's one of those that tends to split people down the middle.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I was just expecting more from it, I think.
Maybe it was just like a victim of the hype.
Probably.
Even like the small hype that your friends gave it.
That you gave it.
Well, yeah, I fucking love it, though. It's brilliant.
I think it's one that I need to rewatch. I need to wait a while and give it another go, I think.
Did you not think it was like an interesting take on the genre, though?
Oh, definitely.
I don't want to give any spoilers away, but...
Yeah, no, I'll give it that, definitely. Yeah, it was something I hadn't seen before. I just thought it was more of a slow burn film than I was expecting.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. I'd definitely agree with that.
Yeah. I watched an Australian horror called Storage. It was actually really good. It could be the hype. I wasn't expecting a lot from it. So it kind of surpassed my expectations there. But yeah, I'd recommend that one. I've written a review for that, but not uploaded it yet, so...
Did we talk about that in the forthcoming releases a few weeks ago?
I think we did. I think we did mention it, yeah. It's a relatively new one.
Yeah.
But yeah, worth a watch, definitely.
Right, I'll make a note.
I also watched Nowhere. I think probably because you mentioned it a while ago.
I love Nowhere.
It is amazing. What's Greg Araki's new film called again? He's got one coming out soon, hasn't he?
It seems to be a return to form. I say return to form. Mysterious Skin was amazing.
Yeah.
But,
Smiley Face, not so much, though.
I haven't seen Smiley Face.
It's not
great.
Has
it got Anna Faris in it or someone?
Yeah.
It's called Kaboom, his new film.
Okay.
Which, yeah. I was having a look at the cast now. Juno Temple, Thomas Dekker, James Duval plays the Messiah, apparently. Which, he does have a bit of a thing for James Duval, doesn't he?
He does, a little bit.
I really like James Duval. He's like a slightly more wooden version of Keanu Reeves, if there ever could be such a thing.
Slightly more wooden, yeah. I can see where you're going.
But he does actually have some range. When I watched the three films in a row, he plays an entirely different character in all three. And I think that does sort of attest to him having a bit of a range, even if it's not so much. Because obviously in the Doom Generation he's a lot more impressionable and quite sort of youthful and a bit dumb, and in Nowhere he's kind of sort of loads of space here, but he's kind of like a lot more sort of laid back and depressive, and then in Totally
World
Fucked
Weary
Up, yeah. I love some of the lines in Nowhere. I think it just hit me at that right age. I was about 16-17 when I first saw it.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I'm not gay, and I'm not in love with a What's the word where people have got two different coloured eyes?
Oh,
there's a name for it.
Yeah, I can't remember now.
Well, I'm not in love with a sort of Bowie-ish, androgynised, camp dude, but I'm generally very confused about my life, and it really sort of hit me. Anyway, carry on.
not a lot else in the way of films. Like I say, I've been super busy. For some reason, I watched a ton of The American Office. Which I really, really enjoy, surprisingly. I hated the British version of The Office, because I just Ricky Gervais gets on my nerves for some reason. I don't really know what it is about him. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is about him that just pisses me off, but I can't take to him. But I really like the American version of The Office. I watched a ton of that lately.
I've not seen an awful lot of The American Office. I saw a few episodes where it was just the same script as the original.
Oh yeah, series one was pretty much exactly the same. Yeah. It was series two onwards that I think they started using their own scripts. And it becomes a different show then. It's much better, I think.
Well, I hear a lot of talk about it, and I just never got around to it. There's so many other sitcoms that I have to watch instead. I'd much rather watch 30 Rock or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which you need to watch if you haven't seen that.
I haven't. I've put those
on my list. You would love... sorry, someone just out-replied me on Twitter and I had to read it. you would really love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's just full of like zingy one-liners and like complete asshole characters that you're not really supposed to like.
Cool.
It's really good fun.
Yeah, I'll definitely put that on my list to watch.
What was that web series thing? Did you watch that?
Oh, Dead Road?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got 5 episodes up on the website now. It's not bad, actually. I mean, it's not great, obviously, because there's absolutely no budget there, but they've taken a good idea, and considering there's no budget, it's very much a labour of love, so it's worth watching. I think
I'm going to check it out. I saw that you did the feature on it, so I thought I'm going to have a look when I get a bit of time.
Yeah, it's worth checking out.
Cool.
What else have I been watching? I watched a bunch of Quincy the other day.
Excellent.
Which it turns out is fantastic hangover TV. And the only other thing is I've been trying to catch up with Supernatural. So I've been watching more TV than films, really.
I'd never watched Supernatural.
It's pretty good. The first few series, the first two series specifically, they are very influenced by like classic horror films.
Right.
There's a lot to spot for horror fans. It's quite good. It was less so now. I think they're into series 5 now. But yeah, I think you might like it actually.
Does it fill the void left by Buffy?
I don't know, I was never really a Buffy fan. I'm going to piss so many people off by saying that now, aren't I? I was never really
pissed
a Buffy fan. I liked it when I was back in high school when it first came out, but it got old quite quickly for me.
I think Buffy just got better as it went on.
Yeah, I kind of lost
like the
interest.
Last series.
Yeah, I never watched Angel either. But I did like Firefly.
I never watched Angel. I didn't watch Firefly either. I've got it... It's been sat on top of my TV waiting for me to watch it forever.
See, Firefly I like. That was really good. I quite like Nathan Fillion, though.
He is good. He does have that sort of everyman quality that really works.
Yeah, really likeable.
Yeah. He's good in Slither. I liked him in Slither.
Yeah. It's, kind of a similar character, really. He's just a lot more ornery. bit more, quite an angry man in Firefly.
Well, I saw the movie, Serenity, or whatever it was called.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no memory of what it's about. I know that they're on a spaceship and one of the main characters dies. But because I didn't know he was the main character, it had almost no bearing on me.
Yeah, I think if you watch the series first, if you watch Firefly first, you'll appreciate Serenity more.
Right. Well, like I said, I've got it sat here waiting for me to watch it. It's just a case of me getting through all of the other shit that I need to watch first. Cool, so that's what we've been watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'll come back and we'll do Hansel and Gretel first. Is that cool?
Yep, suits me.
I guess we should mention that we'll talk about... Today we're going to review Hansel and Gretel and The Eye by the Pang Brothers. And we'll come back and do Hansel and Gretel first. So we'll be back shortly.
Hi, I'm Coffin John of the VCinema Webcast.
And I'm Josh of VariedCelluloid.net.
We're from the VCinema Podcast, a podcast dedicated to Asian, cult, and genre cinema.
We cover all genres from Shaw Brothers and Roman porno to heroic bloodshed in contemporary South Korean cinema.
You can find us at VCinema.VariedCelluloid.net or in the iTunes store under VCinema.
That website again is VCinema.VariedCelluloid.net.
Thank you.
So we're back with our first review, and we are doing 2007's Hansel and Gretel, which is directed by Pil Sung Yim, and nearly knocked the microphone over. And here is a quick synopsis from IMDb. When when Yoon Soo gets lost in a country road, he meets a mysterious girl and is led to her fairy tale house in the middle of a forest. There, Yoon Soo is trapped with the girl and her siblings who never age. Yoon Soo, spoilers at the end there, so we'll just ignore that bit. I was into Hansel and Gretel. It was really beautiful.
Definitely really, very visually stunning film.
Yes, really well shot. Lots of really interesting close-ups. Shot choices were incredible. There was a few brief sections where they used like a shaky cam, and I think they shot those after the fact because they were shot on like a different stock. They looked like completely different. I think they were done on just like a camcorder or something, which sort of pulled me out of the experience a little bit. But on the whole, it was just a beautiful sight to behold.
Yeah, it was. Like, a lot of people have likened it to Pan's Labyrinth and The Orphanage in that respect, and I can see where they're coming from. Talking before, I haven't seen The Orphanage, but certainly Pan's Labyrinth, very sort of similar visual style.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Although one of the comments on IMDb here says that it surpasses Pan's Labyrinth, and I don't think that that's the case at all.
No, I wouldn't go that far. It was good. But no.
One of the things that sort of really bugged me about it, because it's a Korean film, and Koreans just don't know how to edit, so the film's just far too long. It just doesn't seem to end. It doesn't seem to know when it should just say when.
Yeah, I made a note of that as well. Seemed overly long. When there's about 40 minutes to go, it starts to drag a little bit, and it picks up again at the end. But there was a section, sort of about two thirds of the way in, where it did seem to sag a little bit, and that let it down.
I think that's just a flaw in all Korean film. It's they just tend to do that. Like, I mean, I love a lot of Korean films. Oh Boy, and the Park Chan-wook film. Fucking names. The Park Chan-wook films, they don't seem to do it so much, but he's got much more of like a Western vision.
Yeah.
But films like Memories of Murder and say The Green Planet, Korean, I can't remember, but a few of them like that, they would just sort of seem to just all generally drag.
Yeah. What did you think of the acting?
I thought generally it was really good. The little girl was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
The little girl, was her name, what was her name?
Young Soon, I think. Oh
yeah.
No, or was it?
I think Young Hee was the other girl. I have difficulty just looking at this. I have difficulty differentiating between sexes in these names. One of the things as well was that Yun Soo, they make a point of his name being a girl's name. And I had no idea that Yun Soo was a girl's name or a boy's name or even a dog's name. It's just a couple of syllables to me, which might seem a bit sort of xenophobic, but...
A tad, perhaps. No, I wouldn't have known either. I wouldn't have had a clue.
But the older girl, that could have been Young Hee, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
She was very good.
Yeah. I think, at the risk of sounding... I don't know, uninformed. I always find it's in foreign language films, it's quite hard to judge if the acting's much good. I think the language barrier does... I think it's inevitable that it's going to get in the way a little bit. But I think to a certain extent, it actually helps films like this. Because if it had been an American film and the acting had been awful, it would have been really distracting.
I agree. I did see an Eastern film, an Asian film, in which I thought the acting was just rubbish.
Mm.
But I have no idea what that was. Sort of cursory glancing at my DVDs, but my eyes are a bit blurry and I can't make out any of the titles. I know it wasn't June or Dawn of the Dead. I don't know. So the story goes that this guy... Right, there's no characterization on this guy, really, before he just jumps into the story.
Mm-hmm.
He's driving in his car. He has a bit of a crash. He's talking on the phone with his girlfriend. And she's angry at him. And it's established that she's pregnant. And that's about the bulk of the characterization that we're given about him. And later they mention that his mum's ill. But I didn't see any mention of that in the original or in the initial setup.
No, I don't think they did mention it.
Which was a bit... So, yeah, it was a bit strange because when he brought it up later, I was like, is he lying? Is he telling the truth? I don't really know.
Yeah. But yeah, there was, like you say, there was no character build-up, and they didn't really build on his character as the film progressed either.
Not at all.
So it could have been anyone, really.
Well, one of the things as well, he didn't seem to know what he wanted. One point, he wanted to protect the children. Another point, he just wanted to get the fuck away from them.
Yeah, did seem to chop and change quite a bit.
Yes. I really liked that that there was nothing immediately creepy about the family. Although you know that obviously there's going to be something creepy about them.
Mm.
They just don't seem creepy. It's like if it was an American film, it might not have had that level of subtlety.
I don't know. I thought they seemed a little bit creepy.
I mean, at the very beginning when he first meets them,
yeah.
I think they just seem like a fairly strange family in the country. Whereas, I think it could have been tempting to make them like super spooky.
Yeah, I think from the word go though, it's obvious something's up because they're a bit too picture perfect.
Yes.
But like you say, not necessarily creepy. Silence.
Yes. So yes, silence. One of my notes that I wrote in like the first 10 minutes was, is the twist or big reveal going to be that the adults are ruled by the children? And that turned out to not be a twist, just part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was quite interesting. It was a nice take on the Hansel and Gretel, I was going to say myth, but I don't mean myth, I mean story, because it's not based on any reality, is it? Fairy tale, that's the one.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Hansel and Gretel story, obviously, but at the beginning I was a bit confused what they were doing with it.
Yes.
Where they were going to go with it, because it didn't seem to bear much relation at all. And it was only as it got further in that it became a bit more obvious that they sort of flipped it a bit.
Yeah.
You're very pausy today, aren't you?
Yeah, sorry. Right, at one point we see an aerial shot of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a road. Like, we should establish that he can't find his way out of the forest. The kids have got this some sort of mind control stuff. Is that a spoiler? I don't really know if that's a spoiler. I wouldn't say it was.
Kinda.
Oh well, spoiler alert.
It's done now.
Well, they have this sort of mind control stuff, and he can't find his way out of the forest. But when you see an aerial shot, there's just a road that just leads through the forest to the house. So why doesn't he just follow the road?
Well, yeah, but isn't it sort of hinted at that, like you say, with the whole sort of mind control, I guess is the best word for it, it sort of leads you to believe that what he sees isn't necessarily what's actually there. They're controlling what he can see and what is actually there, because you do sort of get the impression that it could change at any one time.
I never got the impression that it was that he was seeing what wasn't there. I thought that they were just sort of changing the environment.
Yeah. That's what I meant, really.
All right.
Honest.
Well, fair enough. I think he just sort of... He could have at least tried following the road instead of trying to walk through the woods.
Maybe.
So, there was quite a lot of rabbit imagery in the film.
Mm-hmm.
There was almost a rabbit in every scene. almost in every shot. Would you? What did you think of that? Did you think it was? Well, yeah. Would you want to extrapolate on what you thought about that?
I don't know, really. I'm not quite sure what we're supposed to read into that. I did notice it. It's pretty hard not to, but I'm not entirely sure what we're supposed to garner from that. What did you think? Well,
I know that rabbits have a lot of sex and, yeah. and have, like, large litters of lots of children.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could have been something to do with that, like, to do with the children side of things. That's nonsense.
Quite tenuous.
And also, rabbits are obviously a symbol of Easter. The film seemed to be set at Christmas, though. Or a sort of never-ending Christmas. So maybe it was just to sort of feed off that holiday feeling. I don't really understand
I don't understand what you're saying. So, something about rabbits, I don't know.
Maybe the main dude just had myxomatosis and it was all like a hallucination.
That's actually the likeliest theory that you've come up with, yeah. I like that. I'm going to pretend that's what happened now.
Yes. But I don't know, there was so many rabbits, they must have meant something. Maybe in Korea, rabbits mean something different to...
Maybe it is a cultural
rabbits have some
thing.
Sort of... Yes, some sort of special significance.
Mm.
Although it was really weird seeing a Korean Father Christmas.
Was it?
Yes. To me it was. I never really pictured him as a Korean.
Did that just flip all your ideals on their head?
It did, because we all know that Santa's a white guy. And he's obviously real. But we all know that he's a white guy. And so him being a Korean guy... was just a bit strange.
I'll be honest, that didn't really occur to me while I was watching it, but you make a point, I suppose.
So, what happens then? Some of the people turn up, they get lost in the woods and turn up, and it's one of them looks like the Korean Robert Evans, the famous movie producer. And his wife is a cunt.
She is, rather. Bit of a bitch.
Yes, she definitely is.
But without wanting to give too much away, what happens to her, I think, it leads to one of the coolest visuals in the film.
What? I was going to ask, what does happen to her? I can't remember what happens to her. Was she the outside one or the upstairs one?
The outside one.
Right. Who was the upstairs one?
That was the original mum. That was the first mum.
Right. This is all very cryptic for the listeners. Yeah, it was very cool what happened to her. But it was also very cool what happened to the upstairs one as well.
Yeah. That reminded me of something else, and I still can't remember what now. But yeah, again, quite vague. Let's move on.
There was a really sort of Ring-esque scene where you see someone in the attic, and their hair's just sort of dangling about.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked. It was quite spooky. The film wasn't scary at all, though. It wasn't a horror film.
It was more The Grudge than The Ring, I thought. I mean, they both kind of have similar... motifs,
yeah.
Don't they? But definitely influenced by one or the other.
I would agree. But yeah, like I say, I don't think it's a horror film. At all.
What would you describe it as? Fantasy?
Myxomatosis drama.
Creating your own subgenre.
I am. I describe it as escape into the woods. Just made a joke to something that... The listeners have no idea because it was an off-air joke. Oh, God.
Yeah. Probably should veer away from private jokes.
Probably. I describe it as kind of like a fantasy. It wasn't horror. There were some horror elements, but I wouldn't ever call it a horror film.
Yeah, there wasn't a great deal of gore in there, was there? Or in fact, scary moments.
No.
Like, you were just talking about the scene that was quite obviously influenced by either The Grudge or The Ring. That was a little bit scary, maybe?
Nah.
It caught me a bit off guard. I wasn't expecting that bit. Because it wasn't really like anything that we'd seen before up to that point.
It was quite out of place as well.
Mm. A little bit.
But it may have worked.
But yeah, there wasn't a lot of gore at all. There were a couple of instances. There was a part near the end which, without giving too much away, I thought one an effect that they used where you didn't really see what was happening, but when the blood hit the camera, I thought that worked really, really well.
The CGI blood hit the camera.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't sort of... It wasn't awful, like, Midnight Meat Train, glaringly obvious CGI blood.
It was... If it wasn't glaringly obvious, it was at least, like, very obvious.
Oh, piss off. I thought it looked good.
Well... whatever. It was, there was some, like I say, some horror-y elements, some little sort of creepy bits. It was more like there was a sort of dark sense of foreboding generally surrounding the film rather than an actual horrific goings-ons. I don't know how that phrase works. Stuff happening.
Yeah.
That'll do. So, the horror elements were a bit strange in what was effectively like a character-driven drama.
Did you think it was character-driven? I'm not sure if the characters were well-rounded enough. I don't think they explored them enough for it to be character-driven. I thought some of the script was pretty dire as well.
Well, I think you lose a lot in translation.
Yeah. I thought... did you spot the dodgy subtitles? They kept spelling Angel Angle. I noticed that a few times.
I didn't notice, but I did watch it. I watched it because obviously we were meant to record on Monday, and I watched it on Monday morning. I woke up early to watch it, so I was a bit sort of bleary while I was watching it.
But yeah, I thought some of the dialogue was a bit too... I thought some of it is quite repetitive.
That's definitely a note that I've got as well.
Mm.
There was... Sorry, go on.
No, you carry on.
Well, there was one particular bit that I particularly noted that was when the little girl asked him to count puppies instead of sheep.
Mm.
He says, "I'll count puppies instead of sheep." And she says, "Yes, count puppies instead of sheep." And it was like, I don't need to hear the word puppies and sheep that often. It's a bit unnecessary.
Definitely. But yeah, there were quite a few scenes like that. They kept using the same phrases and the same words over and over again, and it was just a bit unnecessary. I think that's, like you were talking about the fact that a lot of Korean films are just too long, I think that was the big downfall, really. They could have chopped out so much of that dialogue and it wouldn't have hindered the film at all.
I agree.
They could have chopped out a good 25 minutes, half an hour, I reckon, and had it be quite a short film and still have the same overall effect.
I think in Korea, films are just meant to be a certain length. I don't think I've seen a Korean film that's any less than like 100 minutes. So I think that they just sort of see films as this sort of 100, 120 minute medium and just base everything around that.
Maybe they do, you never know. But yeah, it was definitely a bit too long. They could have got rid of quite a lot of that dialogue. And it was some of the dialogue was quite naive. If you know what I mean, like, it could have been written by a teenager.
Well, coming from which characters?
Oh, any of them. It was just a bit elementary.
I mean, some of the dialogue, you'd expect from the children to be fairly naive.
Well, yeah.
And also from the main dude, Yun-Soo. He was, I think he was meant to be portrayed as quite naive as well.
Well, he was still quite young, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Another note I've got here is that they introduce a clergyman character, and obviously, he's a paedophile.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. Is that like the new sort of Europeans as villains now? Is just clergy as pedos?
Maybe they've created the new stereotype there. I don't know, like you say, as soon as they sort of introduced the character, it was kind of glaringly obvious.
Yeah, telegraphed is the word I'd use.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't really...
Go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, I don't really have a lot more written down for that one.
I've got quite a bit more to go, so we can just discuss that.
Okay.
one of the notes here is I've got the forest and the attic is a maze, like a warren, because of the rabbits.
Clever.
Yeah, so I think that might have been part of the rabbit symbology.
Not the myxomatosis thing.
Well, that as well. I think they go hand in hand.
Okay.
And there's a section, I think this might be what you're talking about with the naivety, when Yun Su tells them a bedtime story about a prince who has to go see his ill mum, mm-hmm. whose girlfriend or princess is pregnant or whatever. And when he tells a story, it's just a list of things.
Yeah.
It's like, so the prince does this, and then the princess does that. And there's like no adjectives or no like storytelling involved. And if I was a child, especially a child with like telekinetic abilities to do like whatever the fuck I wanted, I'd be like, no, dude, tell it properly.
Yeah, you would call bullshit on that, wouldn't you?
You definitely would.
No, they seemed quite into it, though.
It's true, they did. Maybe we were just getting like the abridged version, like the cliff notes.
Maybe. So go on, what else have you got written down then?
I've got, would you go through a door in the forest that led nowhere?
Fuck no.
Fuck no is the correct answer.
Hell no. No, that was, that was a bit daft. And I'm not quite sure why that scene was included.
Well, I guess it was to show that they've got, like, this room full of the memories that they forced, or the things that they've made happen using their powers, because there were so many books and there was so much stuff going on.
God, we're giving a lot away here, aren't we?
Fuck it.
another note
I've got here is a nice mix of piss and blood. I'm not really sure what that pertains to.
When she cut her foot.
And then pissed herself.
Yeah.
Nice. I thought the Korean Santa Claus scene, I keep coming back to that, but I thought it was really moving. I thought that in that particular scene, more so than the rest, the kids really sort of shone as sort of actory, chopsy type folk.
Yeah, it made the characters seem more human as well.
Yeah.
Because they'd been a bit, I don't know, especially the boy had just been a bit distant up until then.
Well, I think that was his character as well, that he was just sort of the distant sort of spooky one.
Hmm.
And he was like the leader, the big cheese. The big Korean cheese. I was a bit confused about the flashback, though. Was it the same actor? Was it the same Korean Bob Evans guy?
I don't think it was. I think what had happened in the flashback and what was happening in the present, the two just mirrored each other, and that's
right.
Why they sort of did it side by side, but I don't think it was the same person.
I was confused as hell at that point, I'll be honest.
They didn't make it explicitly clear.
It sparked the daddy issues that I have sort of dormant within me. They're not so dormant, they're quite close to the surface, but it doesn't take much. So that whole scene got to me quite a lot. I did a little bit of a sob. And then the actual ending was stupid.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what to take from the ending. What did you think?
Well, without giving away like the one final spoiler.
Away the whole film.
the ending, it just sort of didn't ring true. Like,
but
I was feeling it's a bit of a cop out when it's like, oh. Or was it?
Yeah.
Those sort of endings, I just think they're a total cop-out. And then, oh, it was. Or was it? No, it was. But was it?
No, the impression I got was that it was real.
Right.
And I guess it was just their happy ending. Which, I don't know, you might see as a cop-out, but I guess it was a fairy tale film. It was a fairy tale ending. I'm not quite sure what else they could have done.
It's true, I understand. Did you think it was at all similar to the M. Night Shyamalan film, Lady in the Water?
Haven't seen it. I heard it was crap, so I didn't bother.
I actually really like Lady in the Water.
Really?
It's really well shot, and it's really sort of well thought out. It's just arrogant as fuck.
Hmm.
Like, he kills a film critic in it, and
subtle.
And like the writer is the hero. So it's... But anyway, that's a bit off point. To sum up then, what were your final thoughts?
I thought it was a really good idea, but it wasn't explored enough. There were too many holes in it. But despite that, it was still really visually arresting and quite memorable. I thought I liked it.
So, score-wise?
6.5 out of 10, I reckon. Maybe 7 at a push.
No, I'm going to agree with you at 6.5. I think the visuals were stunning. I think it looked incredible. But although there was quite a lot of stuff that sort of kept me interested, the saggy middle, mm-hmm. and the unconvincing ending, it just sort of just made it a slightly above average film for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 6.5.
Yep, definitely.
And that's our review of Hansel and Gretel. Oh, I used the song from the soundtrack in the beginning of this, and that's probably my favourite thing that's come out of me watching this film is hearing that song, because it was fucking incredible, and I really loved it.
Okay.
So we'll be back after this short break with our review of Gingwai, aka The Eye.
Mm-hmm.
Back shortly.
Hello there, ladies and good gentlemen. I'm here to talk to you about something very important today. That's outside the cinema. I know a lot of you listening now enjoy the film world. Boy, outside the cinema covers all kinds of good films. If you're looking for the classics, perhaps you're looking for a good old Nazi film where the Nazis torture and rape everyone in sight. Or giant monsters crawl from the sea. Or perhaps an Italian film where Edward's Finch takes her clothes off for no apparent reason. Or renegade bikers just do whatever they damn well please. Perhaps even occasionally turn into a werewolf. Then outside the cinema is your place to go. That's www.outsidethecinema.com. Outside the cinema, your source for cult movie discussion.
So here we are back again with our review of The Eye by the Pang brothers. Do you want to give us a quick synopsis, please?
Give me a sec.
Oh,
I'm so unprepared. So yeah, when you asked me if I was ready before, totally lying. Here we go. A blind girl gets a cornea transplant so that she is able to see again. However, she gets more than she bargained for when she realises she can see ghosts, and some of the ghosts are downright unfriendly, apparently. So she embarks on a journey to find the origins of her corneas and to reveal the history of the previous owner, which is kind of accurate, if not terribly well written. Person on IMDb, whoever you are.
Well, IMDb is nothing if it isn't beautifully written prose.
With some cleverly argued debates on there.
It's true. If you listen to the Outside the Cinema live show, anybody out there, you'll be able to hear me read an IMDb review, a poorly written IMDb review every week. which we then slate, which is a bit of a sidetrack. There you go. So, to start from the beginning, this film, The Eye, originally called Gin Guai, that's probably how you pronounce it, directed by Oxide Pang Chung and Danny Pang, who I don't believe that they're their real names, and written by Jojo Huet, Juet Chun Hui, and Danny Pang and Oxide Pang Chuang Pang.
You don't believe they're the real names?
No. Well, I know because Hannah deals a lot with China in her work, and they take sort of assumed business names, which are Western names, which is why you find a lot of people who are called like Bruce Lee and stuff like that, because they're just assumed names.
Okay, they are brothers though. I think they might even be twins, you know. I could be making that up. No, I'm sure I read that somewhere.
Fair enough. So, The Eye. I didn't like it very much.
I didn't love it. It was, I thought it was a fairly average film, to be fair.
Definitely. In between all the scares, there was not much going on.
There weren't even many scares, I didn't think.
There were a few bits that really sort of shit me up quite a lot. To our American listeners, by the way, shit me up, I think, is a fairly British phrase. But it means scared me, pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were a few scenes that really scared me. There was one in the where she's learning how to paint words.
Oh, the woman in the corner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and the fucking dude in the elevator.
Yeah. That was the one that really stuck in my mind, the guy in the elevator.
God. Just thinking about it, I was explaining it to Hannah and she was like, sounds scary. But then Hannah got really scared by Lake Mungo, which didn't affect me in that way at all. The Braille opening titles sequence, was this film before or after Daredevil?
I think it might have been after.
Because it was very similar.
It was. Oh, no. No, there was a year between them. It was a year before.
So, Hollywood in rip-off of...
Yoinked that idea.
Yes. Hollywood in rip-off of Eastern film Shocker. I think the real shocker is that Quentin Tarantino wasn't involved. But there was that whole sort of weird fingers on a blanket thing, which was very Nightmare on Elm Street as well.
Kind of creepy, though.
Yeah, it was pretty sort of freaky.
A bit more interesting than just words on a black screen.
Yeah. And one of the things I noticed in the credits is that they're Pang brothers. They're not the Pang brothers for some reason.
Okay.
It just sort of stuck with me a little bit. I was like, well, that's a bit weird. Why are they Pang brothers and not the Pang brothers? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
The first sort of note about the actual film I've got is I think it might have been shot on 16mm because it's sort of really organic looking stock. It looks really, really sort of, it's really nicely shot a lot of the time. And it sort of looks that little bit grainy. But I don't know for sure if it is shot on 16mm. I'm going to have a look now.
I'm not sure if I watched the same one as you then because I got hold of a, I think it was remastered or something. So perhaps I watched a slightly better quality one then, because I didn't notice it being grainy.
Mine was definitely very grainy.
Maybe my TV's just too small.
Maybe. My TV isn't very big. Just a lowly 32-incher.
But anyway, back to the girl with the haunted corneas.
Yes. That's her. Is that the new Steg Larsson book?
Maybe. The girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yes. So I thought the dialogue was really, the subtitles were really literal and they didn't flow at all. It was some of the worst subtitles I've encountered.
Yeah, I definitely agree with
that. For a fairly mainstream film, at least.
Yeah, I wrote the same thing down. It came across very stilted.
Yeah.
Didn't flow at all.
It's an old story. It's one I've seen many times in like the sketch artist films. I can't remember what they're actually called, but like sort of films from the 70s where someone would get a haunted body part and be compelled to kill or whatever. But I think the story was told pretty well.
Yeah, apparently they got their inspiration from I think, a newspaper report that they read. It was sort of a good 15 years ago now. Something to do with the guys that directed it read a newspaper article about a girl who killed herself shortly after receiving a cornea transplant. And they just sort of always wondered why she'd done it. So that's where they came up with the idea.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'd be easy to say it's quite derivative, but I think...
I don't think derivative is a word that I would use. I just say it's like a well-told story. Or a frequently told story. The directing style, I don't know how into it I am. There was lots of, like, super close-ups. Mm. Like, macro shooting, almost. And I think that it made it look quite clinical.
At some points, yeah. Yeah, I'll agree with that. One thing I really didn't like is, at the beginning, just after she had the operation, the scenes where you're sort of seeing from her point of view as she's adjusting to her new eyesight, the shallow focus shots.
Yeah.
I found that a bit disorienting. I don't know whether that achieved what they were going for.
I think that's how it's supposed to feel. You're supposed to feel what she's feeling. And
yeah,
she's,
it's supposed to be a bit unsettling.
Pretty disoriented. I always get mixed up whether it's disoriented or disorientated.
I'm never sure.
Let's just go with either or both. We'll chop and change.
Yeah. But yeah, I get that it's supposed to be quite unsettling, but it just bugged me a bit. I didn't like that. Maybe it's because I've got crappy eyesight. Hit too close to home for me. I don't know.
It did. So, especially when you see all those ghosts as well.
Yeah, just a bit too much.
Yes. One of the things that really bugged me after she had her operation was, why does she need a wheelchair? She could walk fine when she was blind. So why now that she's partially sighted, can she not walk all of a sudden? Is it just like hospital policy in Hong Kong for them to just give everyone a wheelchair? Well,
maybe.
the little girl who I didn't realise was a girl until after.
Do you know?
Until
I thought
like
that was,
way later on.
I thought that was a boy as well. But yeah, she didn't have one.
She didn't.
So
she had cancer. So maybe it's just for minor surgery.
Maybe. Just expected to manage if you're having more serious stuff done.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe they just didn't. Maybe she was waiting for like one of those things that they install in dogs that have got like two broken legs.
Oh, I don't. I doubt that very much. Sorry, that just made me think of something else. My mind went off on a tangent then.
Go on, where did it go?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
To share it with the class?
No.
I thought the music was terrible. Awful music.
Yeah. Yeah, it was some Thai music collective that did the score. Mm. And it was just a bit obvious. Like, sort of sharp, jarring noises every time we're supposed to be scared.
Yes.
And it didn't work wonderfully well.
There was the violin playing scene.
Mm.
I really enjoyed that song. I don't know who did it. I was really excited about Vanessa May when they mentioned Vanessa May, because I think that she's really hot. And I was really excited that I might get to see Vanessa May.
Did you feel cheated?
I did feel very cheated. Spoiler alert, there is no Vanessa May in this film. It's really quite upsetting. But I know what you mean about the sort of sharp sound effects.
Mm.
I think sound effects, or like sound design, is one of the things that really can make a scary movie like this,
yeah,
or a movie like this scary, probably a better way of putting it. Like, I know you didn't like The Strangers very much, whereas I loved it, and I loved it because of the sound design, because every note is like so key perfect that it's, you just jump every time you're supposed to, whereas in this they were sort of a little bit off and they didn't quite elicit the same response or reaction that they were maybe hoping for.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't match up quite as well as it needed to. And then I always thought the, as we were talking before about the really scary scenes, i.e. the guy in the elevator.
Yeah.
I don't remember much of the sound effects being used during that scene.
Well, that one in particular, that's sort of like a Romero-esque scene, I think.
But that was one of the more effective scenes for me.
Yes.
And I don't remember the sound effects there, so they obviously weren't doing the job they were supposed to.
Well, like I say, I think that was different because it's not like, shit, there's a ghost running at me.
Mm.
It was more like, this thing's just behind me and I've got nowhere to go, so it's going to get me in the end. And that's why I think it was pretty sort of Romero-esque, and that's why it didn't sort of maybe need the heavy sound effects or the sound design.
Yeah.
And it worked. It definitely did work because of it. Also, I spent quite a lot of time trying to figure out the significance of certain shots where there maybe wasn't any significance. There was a shot where she's seeing for the first time and she just goes outside the door and we're just looking at a doorway and we just see her arm and there's nothing else in that shot apart from a door frame and her arm and maybe her head at one point. And like, why the hell?
Yeah, I don't know. I must admit, I didn't really try and read too much into that, but I don't know if it was there for a reason or not. Did you come up with anything?
No, I couldn't think of anything why it would be like that. Apart from that, we're only seeing sort of a small section of what's going on, which is maybe because of her blurry vision. That's all she's seeing.
Maybe.
But it's a bit tenuous, I thought.
Yeah, I do think, going back to sort of the truly scary moments, some of the more subtle ones, I think, worked far better than the shoved down your throat ones, because the small boy that she kept seeing who had a cap on and kept looking down all the time,
yeah.
I don't think any of that was remotely frightening.
He actually reminded me quite a lot of a character from the Spawn comics, which is...
I think I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought...
Anyway,
one
sorry,
of,
carry on.
Yeah, I thought one of the most frightening bits that really got me was... So about two-thirds of the way through, before they go... Do they go to Thailand? They're in Hong Kong, aren't they? And then they go to Thailand.
They go to Thailand.
So before they go to Thailand, when they're on the train, before she has that big sort of realisation, that whole scene, you can just see a face in the window next to her.
Yeah.
That really sort of gave me shivers a little bit. And I thought that was one of the more downplayed, subtle bits. And that's one of the ones that worked the best for me. Without the silly sound effects or anything.
Have these guys directed anything else? I'm asking you, and I'm also looking at the same time.
I think they have. There's two sequels to The Eye, aren't there? Did they do those?
Yeah, from what I've gathered, the third one's a spoof. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a spoof. I heard it was a comedy. I don't know if it's supposed to be a spoof or not.
They did The Messengers.
Oh, my God.
You loved The Messengers, didn't you?
I really didn't. They did Bangkok Dangerous.
They did both versions of Bangkok Dangerous. The Nicolas Cage terrible hair version and the original version.
I don't like Nicolas Cage.
I love Nicolas Cage.
Really? He just looks bored all the time. Have you seen Bangkok Dangerous?
No, I haven't, I'll be honest.
Bloody terrible.
He doesn't look bored all the time. Have you not seen The Wicker Man?
Alright, he doesn't look bored in that. He just looks a bit mental.
I love mental Nicolas Cage. I think he's one of my favourite. When he's on form, he's incredible. If you look at like the stuff he did with David Lynch.
Yeah, I just think he hasn't been on form for such a long time.
Well, you haven't seen Bad Lieutenant yet.
I haven't. That's
it's
true.
Amazing.
Okay. You reviewed that in your blog, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
I did review it on my blog, letsgetdangerous.wordpress.com. and I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah, what were we talking... Oh, yeah, The Eye.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, these guys... I haven't seen anything else that they directed. I think if they sort of had someone on their back saying, no, do it this way, or focus more on this is what you're good at, then they could make a really good, fucking terrifying film.
Hmm, yeah.
But...
Seemed like there were moments they got a bit lost.
Yes.
In this one.
Well, I've looked at his picture here on IMDb, and he looks a sort of like the sort of guy who'd be like, oh no, this is cool. So we just sort of stuck it in because it was cool.
You judgmental prick.
He's got long hair. He looks like one of those damn hippies.
I'm going to stay quiet on this one. I'll let you get the hate mail.
Yes. I don't like any deviations from the norm.
Apart from exciting and interesting facial hair.
Yes. Man, I really miss that. I miss my handlebars.
Would you get told off if you did that again?
Yes.
Oh.
We went to, me and Hannah went to a restaurant, and the staff were just like clearly walking past. We were like the last table, like far out, and they just kept walking past us and like pretending to do something so they could just sort of laugh at my face.
Did that make you feel great about yourself?
Oh, I didn't care, but Hannah was really embarrassed about it.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't that bad. Anyway, what
so
are we talking about?
I have a question for you.
Okay.
If you had brand new eyes that allowed you to see ghosts,
mm-hmm.
Would they also allow you to be able to hear ghosts that you couldn't see?
I'm confused.
Well, there's the scene in the hospital.
Yeah.
Where she can't. She's hearing all these weird ghost noises, and there's no ghost.
Yeah.
She can't see a ghost, and then a ghost appears from around the corner. So would these magical mystery corneas allow her to hear something that she can't see yet?
Well, I guess they did.
Well, I guess they did, but should they?
Probably not, if we're being pedantic.
Well, I think we are. Well, I definitely am.
Well, in that case, no, then they shouldn't.
I just found it a bit sort of... I was like, what? What's going on? I don't understand. This is all very strange.
That didn't cross my mind when I was watching it, I'll be honest.
I have a pedant's eye.
You do?
And ears, apparently, as well.
Yeah.
So, that was one of the things that sort of bugged me a little bit. Another thing I found that was annoying was that the eye line was muddled in, like, in intercut sort of conversational scenes. Like, I didn't really believe that characters were addressing each other because the eye line was a bit sort of wonky. But that could have been something that was intentional because it's called the eye. But
yeah, I don't know.
Maybe I just thought it was a bit sort of extraneous for us to believe that they're actually talking to each other.
Maybe. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt and think that it was intentional, but couldn't tell you.
Hmm.
But yeah, overall, how scary did you actually think it was? Because before watching this, I'd heard it was quite terrifying and I didn't think it was. So what did
you
think?
It elicited... I got quite scared at some points.
Yeah.
I said, the elevator scene, like, scared the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
The weird woman launching herself was quite scary. There were a few other points where I sort of did a little audible gasp, which is quite unlike me. But they definitely did scare me in sections. But the sections in between were just so meh.
Yeah. I think if you spoke the language that they spoke in the film, as Chinese, wasn't it? Chinese film.
Yeah. I guess it'd be Mandarin. I don't know. Is Mandarin just like the catch-all language for China? Maybe we should research this.
Perhaps.
It was Singapore. Fuck off. I don't know. Yeah.
Somewhere over there.
Cantonese.
But yeah, they believe in their whichever religion dictates that they sort of believe in a version of the Grim Reaper as portrayed in the film.
Is it Taoist?
I think so, yeah. But we don't really have an equivalent of that.
Well, we have the Grim Reaper.
Our equivalent of their equivalent is the Grim Reaper. In religion, do we though?
We
don't. No Western religion dictates that we have a Grim Reaper, does it?
I don't. No, I don't know.
So
maybe
I think if we had a true equivalent of that, then maybe it would have been a bit more frightening.
Don't you have the dude at the boat on the River Styx? What religion's he from?
What?
Like. They have to pay the ferryman on the River Styx.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, ferries you over on his little magic boat. I don't know. Religion's bollocks. Let's just move on. Sorry. If you've got any religious listeners, you might as well turn off now. No, don't. Just keep listening till the end, then send us angry feedback. I don't know if we have anything like that in a Western religion. I don't really know enough about Western religions to... There's certainly not anything about it in Christianity.
No.
Or any of the denominations.
Which is arguably the biggest Western religion.
What other Western religions are there? Is there one in Scientology? Do they like? Have they got a special alien called Blarg who like flies you to K-Pax or whatever the fuck?
Probably. It wouldn't surprise me.
If we've got any Scientologists listening, get in touch. We want to know if Blarg really does take you to the planet K-Pax.
Just don't try and convert us, please.
No, try. I want to be friends with Tom Cruise.
No, you might have to watch and pretend you enjoy Battlefield Earth then, though.
I do watch and enjoy Battlefield Earth.
Oh, you don't?
On a regular basis. Not for any, like, real reason. It's fucking dreadful, but...
Not for any real reason.
It's just a lot of silly fun. I remember when it first was sort of in works and it was coming out, that John Travolta was so proud of it. And, like, it was like his personal passion project, which is just the most ridiculous thing.
They made a sequel, didn't they? Or did I imagine
Did they
that?
Really?
No, I might IMDb be imagining right that. Maybe I dreamt it, I don't know.
You wished. Battlefield Earth, Evolution and Creation. What's that? No, it's a documentary. Damn it.
Maybe I did imagine it. Oh, God.
Your imagination is fucking terrifying.
It's more terrifying than the fact that the first one exists. Oh no!
I love it. I went to an all night Mystery Science Theatre marathon in as part of London Sci-Fi Festival, and they showed that with the riff tracks on it, and it was just so much fun. I might have fallen asleep because it was about 4 a.m, but it was a lot of fun. Good stuff to fall asleep to. If that makes any sense. So the eye, we've gone off topic so much on this review.
We should just call the second one the tangent section.
We should,
because this seems to be a recurring theme.
Speaking of recurring themes, I'm going to segue back into the eye. The changing room stuff,
mm-hmm,
was shit. It looked so much better in the dog shit remake.
See, now I haven't seen the remake.
I actually went to a private screening of it with Jessica Alba.
Just you and her?
Yeah, just me and her, you know, sitting on the back row. Me looking at her fucking gigantic hair. Her hair is so big.
Really?
But no, I think there was maybe 40 of us, 50 of us. It was part of the Fright Fest, they did a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it at a screening room in a hotel in London, and it was... I wanted to, in the Q&A afterwards, I wanted to ask her why it was so shit.
But you didn't.
I didn't. She was quite pregnant. She looked like she could cry. But she just looked like a waxwork. I don't know if you've seen the pictures on my Facebook, but she just looks like a waxwork chocolate bar.
Fair enough. I'll have to have a look for those in a bit.
With huge hair. Seriously, her hair was so big. It was like... It was like she was in a John Waters film.
I need to see this now.
But yeah, those effects were rubbish, I thought.
Yeah,
and
were.
The rocking chair that was obviously just under a spotlight a bit above the set was a bit shit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the woman lurching at the camera scene, you really see... I think it's intentional there, because it's sort of a bit grudgy as well, where her face just sort of changes to this... I guess it's meant to be like an otherworldly sort of creepy ghost type monster, but really it just looks like a mannequin with a big hole drilled in its face.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I didn't enjoy that so much.
No. What did you think about the pacing, the editing?
Well, like I say, because like there's sort of a few scares, and the other stuff seemed to drag quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing was a bit awful. It might have been good. I mean, some people might have thought it was good, pacing-wise, but I just thought the exposition was just really slow and boring, and everything was really predictable as well, so that didn't help.
It was quite predictable. I thought the pacing was okay, though. I wouldn't say it necessarily dragged for me, but like you say, very predictable. It was always obvious where it was going.
Yes. More so because I've seen the... almost shot by shot remake, but
that'll do it.
It will, won't it? That'll sort of pull you out of it a little bit. What did you think of the weird sort of Lynchian violin exorcism scene?
I honestly didn't think too much of it.
Really? It was one of the highlights of the film for me.
No, not for me. I don't know. I think I was expecting more, and I didn't get it, and it was just a bit, oh, it's over.
I thought the violin sounded really fake.
Yeah.
Like a synthesizer. But I thought the scene was really sort of incredible.
Okay.
Really well put together, really well edited. It could just be released as like a short, and I would have really liked that.
Would you have preferred it to the whole film?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
It really pulled the right emotional response out of me.
So it didn't really get any emotional response out of me.
That's because you're cold and unfeeling.
I am dead inside, clearly.
You're a husk. more private jokes. That's not even a joke. That was quite cruel. I have another question.
Okay.
Does that one doctor deal with everyone? I mean, I get that he's a surgeon, but wouldn't a special, like, eye surgeon do the eye operation, and then maybe a special sort of cancer surgeon or brain surgeon remove a brain tumour from a small boy stroke girl?
I don't know. Maybe it's a really badly funded hospital and he's the only surgeon. Ordinarily, you would think it would almost certainly be two different people. But for the interests of character development, I guess it was easier to have it be the same person.
And it's just really lucky that his like nephew is an eye sight therapist or whatever he is.
I know, coincidence, right?
It's really funny.
I know he was a psychiatrist, wasn't he? I don't think
yes.
It was specific to the operation she'd had. He was just.
Well, he must have had some sort of knowledge in the field, otherwise he wouldn't be able to help someone who's just regained their sight.
I mean,
I'm sure it's not like a blanket thing where right now I know a little bit about people's mothers, so I can I can now tell you why you're confused about seeing a ghost.
Okay. I just kind of assumed it was sort of general mental health. I don't know.
The voiceover stuff was really annoying.
At the beginning and at the end?
Yes.
Yeah. Why did you find it annoying?
I just thought it was unnecessary. It was just like, why do you need to explain this plot device? The plot device should speak for itself.
Mm. Yeah,
if you have to explain it to people, then you're doing it wrong, pretty much.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. They could have had the scenes without the narration, and it would have had the same effect. You would have still been able to gather what was going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a bit of a lazy storytelling technique, that one.
Definitely. And I didn't buy the mystery at all. I just didn't believe in it. It didn't affect me at all.
No.
And then everything sort of wraps up really quick and neat, just in time for the big scary finale.
Mm-hmm.
Which was grim but unsatisfying.
Are you going to say anything about the finale? Are you going to give a spoiler
warning?
You've got
some notes, haven't you?
Well, brief notes.
Do you want to do like a minute or 2 minute spoiler section?
I guess we could do. If you haven't seen the film, don't listen for the next minute.
Yeah, go for that.
But yeah,
starting from now.
I thought the bit at the end, obviously, with the big explosion, was probably the highlight of the movie for me. I thought some of the effects were pretty good. Pretty damn good, in fact. And I think sort of right at the end when they're sort of surveying the dead bodies, I thought they did an excellent job of recreating that. I mean, they clearly done their homework. The way they were sort of sat in the cars in the pugilist position.
Yeah.
You know, like when the tendons sort of seize up. I thought that was really quite well done. It looked good.
I thought the best part of that scene was just the ultimate creep factor of having all the Grim Reaper dudes just stood outside the cars, just sort of patiently waiting.
Yeah. I don't know. It was done quite well, but the actual Grim Reaper guys, the ghostly sort of figures,
yeah,
annoyed me a little bit. Well, not them themselves, but when they were sort of taking the dead people away, it just kind of went a bit, you know, like the ending of Ghost Ship.
No.
You've not seen that.
Managed to avoid that one.
Oh, good for you. It's terrible. But yeah, it's just sort of recalled that a little bit for me, and it was just a bit twee.
Right.
I thought there could have been another way of doing that. It was a bit cringy, I thought. But yeah, up until that moment, I thought that was fantastically well done. And we've probably had a minute now, so...
Cool. So then the butler did it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do my quick sum up now.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the special effects were really sort of X-Files-y. The story was kind of hackneyed and a bit sort of... we've heard it all before. It was fairly predictable.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a few nice sort of jumpy scares and a few even nicer, like, slow burn scares that really sort of affected me after I finished watching it. So I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you've just said there. I've written down 6 out of 10.
So you liked Hansel and Gretel better?
I did, yeah.
Well done. Cool, so we're done now, so we'll be back after the break with some feedback and upcoming releases as well. Cool.
Are you tired of film podcasts where the hosts exist in a constant, blissful state of agreement?
I mean, the main characters are two of the dullest main characters I have ever encountered in any film.
Well, you're in luck. Let me introduce you to Chinstroker and Punter. One is an ex-film student with a penchant for David Lynch and art cinema. The other is a man on the street. Listen in perplexed and horrified terror as we tear apart one film a week.
Just really
it's
isn't.
Not visually striking.
No.
Just getting confirmation.
It's just dealing, that's the third time though. I mean, is this on?
You can find us at chinstrokerversuspenta.podomatic.com. So come and share the victory.
If you could fuck any man in film, who would it be and why?
My answer is Lance Henriksen.
Oh. So
he wouldn't tell. He looks like somebody. He looks like somebody who can keep a secret.
So we're back with some feedback. So we've only got one piece of feedback this week, and I believe it's from Ben at Cynicaltania. So whenever you're ready. Oh, it's before that goes off. It's our first piece of audio feedback. We should notice that because that's a landmark for us in our 3-show history or something. So yeah, go ahead, play the feedback.
We're ready?
Yeah.
Hello, Jamie and Sarah. It's Ben from Cine Coltania here. I have a wad of notes from your second episode. Plus, I am fucking tired. I have just ridden a bike, like, massive amounts of kilometres with flat tyres, so I'm exhausted. And I've had to deal. So, this will be a thrilling, massive, and new tale.
The typing very loud.
See a dirty shame, Jamie. And ignore Sarah, because she's wrong. It is awesome. And Sarah, watch it again, because I've seen it 1,000 times, and it gets better every time. And the person who I'm here with can vouch for that, because he has seen it, and it is awesome. And Johnny Knoxville is awesome in it, and everyone. It's one of those films you're just like, this is something I never expected to see in cinema, ever. Really, it's John Waters doing a modern sort of exploitation picture of the old roadshow variety, you know, like the mum and dad type thing, which is like a, you know, warning against sexuality, but done completely fucking times 1,000, and it's brilliant to see it. And, well, briefly, when you said you watched Alone in the Dark again, I was like, oh, Alone in the Dark, but then it was the crap one. Why don't you watch the other Alone in the Dark again, which is the really awesome slasher film from the 80s, which has Jack Palance and Martin Landau and Donald Pleasance as raving psychos killing people, and is brilliant and has one of my favourite endings in horror ever. It's just great. It's like there's not enough slasher films with raving old men of the 50s charging around killing people. True. Next up, Screaming Mad George. You wondered why the fuck Screaming Mad George had anything to do with Faust. It's because, probably because many years before, he did the special effects for Necronomicon, I believe, which was also Brian Yuzna, like, co-directed and produced, and that was meant to be, like, a big hit and meant to get cinema releases, but you probably remember that it took years to come out, and it was a bomb, and it was a disaster. But anyway, that's where the Screaming Mad George connection probably comes from. Yes, Necronomicon. Also, Needful Things was a TV show miniseries originally. It was edited down for a cinema release, I believe, so hence why there's a 3-hour version and why you probably wondered where all this stuff was happening, like, because it wasn't in that version you saw. Also, why is Castle Rock so important? It's Stephen King's main town that he was writing about for like 20 years, and Needful Things was him killing that town. That's why it gets blown up, well, at the end, spoiler. Because he'd had enough of Castle Rock, and he was just like, fuck it, I'm going to blow the bastard to the ground. So that's why it all happens. And also, speaking about Faust, how could I forget this? That film fucking sucked. I hated it so much. I don't even remember it. I saw it, like, years ago, and I still remember that I hate it. I just, yuck. But, yeah, there's, like, 3 other films that crappy production company produced, and one of them was Beyond Reanimator, which is actually good. It's bad, but it's fantastic. Anyway, I've blathered along enough, and I will shut up now. So, keep up the good work. Oh, last thing. I'm doing this weird, like, study at the moment on virtual reality goggles, and I have to watch these video clips, and they're kind of, like, the person's picked out weird, random stuff. So I'm watching Jackie Chan's Who Am I in a backwards order, because they're watching in 15-minute parts, but they showed me, like, part 8 first, and then part 2, and then part 1. Actually, it's probably more interesting watching it backwards. Anyway, the other thing they keep showing me in these virtual reality goggles is the Aardman Productions Creature Comfort. And about the same time I started watching these Creature Comfort clips, I started listening to you guys. And I'm sorry, but you remind me of your accents are so much alike. And so I'm sometimes picture you as a guinea pig, Jamie. I'm sorry. It's true. Anyway, catch you later, guys. CineColtania.blogspot.com. Now I'm going to go back to the couch and the tequila. Ciao.
Well, thanks for that, Ben, I think. I've never been called a guinea pig before, although I have been told that I do look like an otter.
An otter?
Yes.
Okay.
It went so far, me looking like an otter, that Hannah, like, photoshopped one of those sort of floppy ear furry hats onto a picture of an otter and said that it looked just like me. You mentioned that you're going to watch Beyond Reanimator this weekend. Have you seen it before?
I have, yes. But
I love it.
Giving it a rewatch.
I love it. I love the crawling, reanimated penis. I'm going to watch A Dirty Shame, despite what you said, based on Ben's recommendation. And if it's not awesome, then I'm going to come after you, Ben. And if it is awesome, then I'm going to come after you, Sarah.
Yeah, I can deal with that.
Well, you'll have to. I'll be there. I'll be like, at your door with an axe or some other implement.
Brother, it was beers.
Well, there will be beers. we need to announce that at some point in the next month or two, there will be a podcast where we're in the same room.
Yeah, touch wood, hopefully.
Touch wood. That will be exciting. I need to figure out the logistics of coming over to yours and bringing stuff and mics and all that malarkey, but fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. And you also suggested sort of doing a commentary, didn't you?
Yes.
Which could be quite cool.
If me, you, and Dave and Arnie are all there, mm-hmm. then we could just do like a round table commentary. That'd be really good fun.
Yeah, that's
exciting. It'd be like a sort of riff tracksy, boozy, fueled bullshit a-thon. I think that'll be what it's called.
Definitely. Emphasis on the bullshit.
Emphasis on the bullshit, of course. Is there anything else with us?
No. Very rarely any insight, that's for sure.
Yes. So, well, thanks for that, Ben. We do appreciate you feeding back to us. I do really enjoy your podcast, as you know. So, yes, if anyone else wants to send us some feedback, you can email us at podcast@gorepress.com.
Yeah.
Or you can always pop a comment on the podcast page on the GorePress website, which is gorepress.com. Or you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. The last time I was bitching about how Sarah didn't have a Twitter, and then before the episode was released, Sarah decided to get on Twitter. So I'm at underscore dangerous. Well, you didn't take much persuasion. So I'm at underscore dangerous. And what are you, Sarah? Come on, work for your keep here.
Just /GorePress. As easy as
yes.
that.
Or at GorePress, depending.
I'm still getting used to it, leave me alone.
Well, you're doing quite well. I'm sure it helps that you had like a pre-existing list of followers and followees.
It made life a bit easier, yeah. Except I don't know who anybody is. I'm still figuring that out.
You got to say it with the accent.
But I can't do it. It's not. It wouldn't be a patch on yours.
I don't know who he is. Oh, not a week goes by without me being reminded of that. So let's press on and do the new releases for... Well, we'll start with the week commencing 5th of April, which is this week. Mm-hmm. The first release I got here is the Day of the Dead Blu-ray, which also comes... Well, there's a Blu-ray and a DVD. Now, I've got a two-disc version of Day of the Dead already, mm-hmm. so I don't see what's going to be new about this new two-disc DVD. But I guess the Blu-ray could be quite interesting.
Yeah.
Not that I have a Blu-ray player, but if you do, then... Well done, you have more money than I do. The second one I got on my list here is not a horror, but a... Excuse me. It's not a horror, but a action film starring none other than the Dolph and also the Van Damme and the UFC fighter whose name I don't know. And that's Universal Soldier Regeneration, which I loved. I reviewed it on my other blog and I just loved it so much. So I urge you all to go out and buy that, I guess. On here I've also got Roger Corman's Forbidden World, which is, I assume, the Star Wars-y rip-off early 80s one, but I could be wrong. I don't really know. This is me filling dead air with me talking. That was a bit of a Alan Partridge reference there. Yeah, I guess it's that one. I really enjoy that film. It's really silly. It's got some Jim Wynorski connection to it, which means that it's very silly fun, because Jim Wynorski is a silly fun director. It seems like a lot of Roger Corman stuff's getting released on DVD this week. Big Bad Mama, Big Bird Cage, The Unborn, and Black Belt are also getting released this week. And I haven't seen any of those films. Also, Delicatessen, which is the Jean-Pierre Jeunet sort of horror-y. It's not really a horror film, but it's kind of cannibal-y. Was that a spoiler? Have I been a spoiler? Well, it's good and you should watch it, but don't be pissed off if I spoiled it for you. The Hammer version of Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde is released this week, which is one of the better Hammer films. I'm not a big Hammer guy, to be honest. So that's that one. Also, the Collector has just been released in the US. You can get it on US import on Amazon, which obviously I loved. The review should be popping up on the old Gore Press sometime soon.
Yeah.
And also The Relic, which I haven't seen. And the only thing this week getting a cinema release is a re-release of the classic Alfred Hitchcock shower murder-a-thon Psycho, which is probably due a rewatch, but I might not go to the cinema to see it.
Just don't mistakenly watch the Gus Van Sant version.
I went to the cinema to see the Gus Van Sant version, and I just don't understand why it exists.
No, there is no reason for it.
I just don't understand why you do a shot-by-shot remake as some sort of art, experimental art piece, and then insert your own bullshit into it. Like, nobody wants to see Vince Vaughn wanking off.
No.
Even though it's like pre-puffy Vince Vaughn.
Still not good.
It's definitely not good at all. I'm not into that one bit.
No.
So, yeah, don't watch that version. Watch the original version and the 4,000 sequels that it spawned. So, right, we're going to go for the week commencing the 12th of April.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not an awful lot here. We've got The Descent Part 2 on DVD and Blu-ray, which I thought was alright. I didn't think it was anything special. Kind of like an alien contamination to Alien.
I still haven't seen it, but The Descent's one of my favourite horror films, so...
Well, it's sort of more of the same, but in a sort of cheesier way. It's like they obviously wanted to do a similar thing in the sort of Aliens bent, but they just sort of manufacture this cheesy way for them to go back down. Like you would take a trauma suffering, clearly driven insane by some sort of crazy ordeal type person back into a hole in the ground. Just nonsense. There's a Descent and Descent 2 two-pack that's been released. Not the wrapper, but like a DVD pack. Ghost Machine, which I have no idea what it's about, but there's a man on the cover, lots of blurry stuff. A film called I'm Gonna Explode, which doesn't look very horror-y.
It doesn't.
I'll be honest.
No.
But
I know nothing about that one.
Interesting title, at least.
Yeah.
Shuttle is released. I thought Shuttle was already out, but...
Shuttle is already out. I've owned it for quite some time now.
Well...
Maybe it didn't do well enough and they're releasing it again in the hope that people missed it the first time around. It's not bad, actually.
What's it about?
It's, basically Tony Curran doing his psychopath bit. It's about a couple of girls who come back off holiday and get in a shuttle bus that they expect will take them home and doesn't. And it's just all set in one night. It's quite good, though. It's all right.
It sounds like an episode of Still Game with Robbie Coltrane.
I don't know about that, but yeah, it's
well,
all right.
I think I'm the only person who watches Still Game.
I think you are.
I do love my Scottish sitcoms. Is it British?
No.
No?
No, American film.
Of course it is. I'm looking at the cast. What a fucking moron. The Devil's Mercy, don't know too much about that.
No.
Came out in 2007. It's got Stephen Rea in it. I don't know who he is. And plot description says, blah-de-blah-de-blah. disappearance. Sounds exciting. Then we've got Henry Lee Lucas, Serial Killer, which stars Antonio Sabato Jr. Jr.
I think that might be a superfluous junior on the end.
Wouldn't it just be Antonio Sabato the third?
Yeah, you'd think.
Well, Henry Lee Lucas, he was a killer, and now there's a film about him.
But wasn't Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer about him?
Was it? It's been so long since I've seen Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. I was thinking about proposing it as a future cover for one of the episodes.
Okay.
Maybe do that and Leslie Vernon.
Okay.
When you type, it's so loud.
I'm sorry. I can't make it quieter, I'm afraid.
You could try, like, not fisting, but bashing the keys with your fist. It's like that scene in Taken. That's what it is when you're typing. Not Taken. Wanted. Fuck am I on that?
I take so much crap off you. You're mean. Yeah. It is about Henry Lee Lucas anyway.
Is it?
Yeah. In which case, well, I don't know why they bother doing another film, because they're obviously not going to top it. Especially not with Antonio Sabato Jr. Jr.
I think he could fill Michael Rooker's shoes fairly adeptly.
You reckon?
No.
Maybe we should do a double bill of both of those.
That would be... yeah, we could do that.
Or not.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He's got blood on his shirt in the video cover. What year is this? on the DVD cover. So it could be all right. I don't know why that's a mark of quality, but well,
maybe that's how
knows?
We should rate films from now on.
Oh, I really liked Henry Lee Lucas serial killer. I give it 4 bloodied shirts.
That could work.
Me and my friend John were talking about this the other week, and having like a film specific like out of 5 ratio. So it's like Antichrist, I give it 4 desecrated vaginas. Not desecrated. That's not even that's not the word I mean to use. That just made me sound fucking stupid now.
Moving swiftly on,
desecrated vaginas aside. We've got Massacre at Central High, which is being re-released by Beyond Terror. I know somebody somewhere on the old Twitter, the back of Forrest Whitaker's neck was after this. So I told him I was going to send him one of my copies, but I might just buy another copy and send it to him, because it's only £6. And then the Nightmare on Elm Street Blu-ray is out, which... will make it look shit, I assume.
Maybe.
I just think it would highlight all the crappy effects, the big stretchy arms. They look crappy enough as it is. As much as I love the first Nightmare on Elm Street, I think the effects will not have aged well and will look particularly bad on the old Blu-ray. Not that I've ever watched a Blu-ray.
I have, and you could be right.
I'm resisting it because I'm skint.
As good a reason as any.
It is. That's what I like to think. And there's no interesting cinema releases this week. Or at least I think there isn't.
Nothing at all?
No, I don't think so. I remember looking.
It's a bit of a scanty time for horror films at UK cinemas.
It's true. Girl with Dragon Tattoo is still out. Alice in Wonderland could be considered a horror if you're 10. Clash of the Titans is horrific if you like cinema.
Shh. Sorry.
It's no problem. Bit of a guest spot there from... Which one was that?
That's Sanchez.
Sanchez. Dirty, dirty Sanchez. No, I can't see anything. Even in the coming weeks. I'm quite excited about Iron Man 2.
Oh yeah, a trailer looks really good.
It does. Repo Men, not so much.
No.
It just sounds... like Repo?
The Genetic Opera?
Yeah.
I'll be honest and say I haven't actually sat through it from beginning to end before, but I know somebody who watched it and thought it was absolutely dire, so gave me the edited highlights, and what I saw was pretty shocking, I must admit. But maybe I should sit down and watch it before drawing conclusions.
Maybe you should. I haven't seen it either.
I quite like musicals, so... But yeah, the Repo Men just sounds quite a lot like Repo the Genetic Opera without the singing.
It does sound like that a lot, but it's got Jude Law in it, and I'm a big Jude Law fan, and I know a lot of people
are
coming around to Jude Law. Yes. A lot of people are coming around to Jude Law at the moment because of his work in, like, Sherlock Holmes. But I've been a big Jude Law fan for quite a long time.
God, no, he just looks so smug all the time. He's got a face that I can
smug,
never get tired of punching.
That's half of his charm.
Really?
Yeah, I really liked him in Midnight in the Garden of Good, that film with John Cusack. And I really particularly liked him in The Talented Mr. Ripley. I think that film's just incredible. I don't know who directed it off the top of my head.
Maybe Alfie just ruined him for me.
Well, Alfie's a smug prick, though. Even when it's, I was going to say Citizen Kane. Even when it's Michael Caine playing him. Even when it's Michael Caine playing Alfie, he's still a smug prick.
Yeah, just more hateable when it's Jude Law. Anyway, we digress again.
Well, why not? I don't know if there's anything else worth talking about that's coming out this week. The Infidel's coming out this week, which I'm quite excited about. Which is directed by David Baddiel of the eponymous Baddiel and Newman and Baddiel. Eponymous. That's so eponymous. And he was also half of Baddiel and Skinner. And it's about a Muslim man who finds out that he's actually Jewish.
Oh.
Which is quite interesting.
I've not really heard a lot about that.
It's got Omid Jalili in it, and I'm a big Omid Jalili guy.
Mm.
Also the railway, fucking can't talk.
It's always around this time, isn't it?
It really is. At least it's not
fucking.
He just
goes to shit.
Well, there's a reissue, 40th anniversary reissue of the Railway Children, which might bring back a lot of memories to people who are older than us. Well, older than me, at least.
Well, sod off. Not as a subtle dig there, thank you.
Well, you are older than me.
Slightly.
This.
Not cool, Jamie. Not cool.
I'm 25 next month. How horrible is that? I'm not looking forward to it. Although, I do have a wish list on Amazon, so if you do want to buy me the DVDs, then...
you can't pimp that out in the podcast.
I can do whatever the fuck I want. I'm the podcast man.
Oh, God. Here's the review for this film. Buy me shit.
That's actually what the list is called.
I know you too well, clearly.
Well, I guess we can wrap up there because
we're
just sort of giggling and not really saying much. So, as always, check out some of our friends outside the cinema, GGTMC. These are all available on iTunes, or you can just Google them because I haven't bothered writing the addresses down. So, like I say, outside the cinema, The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, Cinecultania with Ben, who you heard the message from before, the NOTLP, Night of the Living Podcast. Oh, I'm so excited that Cinema Diabolica is back. Cinema, obviously, you don't listen to a lot of podcasts, so you're not really familiar, but Cinema Diabolica were one of the first podcasts I got into, along with Mondo Movie. And they sort of disappeared for a long time, and now they're fucking back, which is exciting for me. I'm into it. Also listen to Are You Serious, featuring Chris from Outside the Cinema, Chinstroker versus Punter, who are quite sweary. And British, which is always good fun. Show with Miles and Katie. Action Attraction from Metal Mikey. The V Cinema Podcast, you've probably heard a promo from them before. And Horror Etc. Those are the bulk of the ones I listen to, if I forgot to mention you, then you're obviously not good enough. In terms of blogs, always check out, we'll check out firstly letsgetdangerous.wordpress.com, except don't, because I haven't written anything on there in a good while. I think the last post I did was about the Tron trailer. The whole sort of Gore Zone stuff really just put me off blogging generally, which is a shame. But check out deadlydollshouse.blogspot.com. Check out zombiecommand.com. Is that the right address?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Oh, also check out chucknorrisatemybaby.blogspot.com. And then dogatemywookie, which is Clifford's blog. I'm not quite sure. I think that's .com. Heaven's Trash. That's Heavens with a Z or a Z if you're not American. .blogspot.com. Paracinema, they do a kick-ass magazine, which I say that, but I haven't actually read it yet, but I really enjoy their blog at paracinema.blogspot.com. This is Quite Cool from Hans, this is quietcool.blogspot.com, and Death Rattle 13. So check those blogs out. Also check out Sugar and Vice dot whatever it is. What is it?
sugarandvicedesigns.com.
Check that out. And yeah, check out gorepress.com for all your horror review needs or something.
God, you're really selling it.
for at least some of your horror review needs.
A percentage.
Yeah. I'd say a good 45%.
Yeah, that's fair.
we've taken on some new writers recently.
Yeah, well, just the one for now, but we've got a couple more that have expressed interest, so if all goes to plan, we should have two more. But yeah,
excellent.
We've had Louise join us recently. So yeah, I'm looking forward to reading more of her writing.
Yeah. Coming up soon on the site, I've just spoken to Chang Seng, who's one of the producers of Laid to Rest, about getting as a potential interview with some of the guys involved with that, so fingers crossed that that comes off.
Mm-hmm.
Also the folks from the film Long Pigs got in touch. I watched the trailer and it looks fucking cool. Did you manage to watch the trailer yet?
I did, finally, yes. And it does, I agree. Looks wicked, yeah.
It does. Very low budget, but like super wicked.
Mm-hmm.
Wicked is not a word that I would ever use. I don't really know why I said it. But it does look really good. So they've got in touch and they're going to send us over something to watch, and then maybe we'll do an interview with those guys too. And I'm still waiting for the Butcher Brothers to come through on their friggin' interview. It's been over 6 months.
So dudes,
if you're listening, Butcher Brothers, fucking pull your fingers out. And if you're not listening, then why the fuck not? But seriously, I'm only kidding. I really want to interview you guys. I'm going to do a feature on my favourite short horror films. So if anyone has any suggestions for that, then feel free to bung them over to me on the Twitter, which is twitter.com/_dangerous. Is there anything else in the melting, percolating pot?
Yeah, we've got a few reviews ready for upload. Obviously, one for The Collector.
Yep.
Got one for a film called Tony, London Serial Killer. We've got a fantastic feature, actually, that Aaron's done about the film Donkey Punch.
Excellent.
Which will be well worth a read.
Also, sorry to cut you off, everyone should check out Dave's feature on 3D horror.
Yeah, definitely.
It's actually a really cracking read.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't sound surprised by that, really. it's really good, though. I recommend everyone check it out.
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Well, that's pretty much all I was going to say. We've got lots of other bits and pieces, but yeah, they'll be up sort of within the next week, I would imagine. So keep your eyes peeled.
Cool. So I guess that we're all done and dusted for this particular episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
Next week, or well, it will be next week now, won't it? Just
mm-hmm.
about. We are reviewing two films. Obviously, we're going to do 2000 Maniacs, Herschel Gordon Lewis's original 1964 gore classic, and we're also doing a film called White Lightning, which Sarah's sort of brought to my attention, which I know almost nothing about, other than there's some sort of hillbilly tap dancing involved.
Yep.
And someone gets scared into the woods. Someone escapes into the woods, which is the genesis of the joke that you probably didn't get before. So,
and won't
as
do.
Always, as always, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
And if we didn't alienate you too much with our fucking drivel, then we'll see you again next time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Cool. So, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.